Okay. Good morning. Lovely to see you all. I hope you're all doing well. As it's been pointed out, I've done my best to make this as accessible as possible. We've gone beyond highlighting today. We now have vowels in the Gemara. John pointed out it feels a bit like cheating. I too remember the days when I would sit in yeshiva and spend 4 hours trying to understand one line, and if I'd only had the vowels, it could have saved me a lot of time, and I could have maybe done more than one line. But it felt good to exert some effort, so we'll try to spare us that effort. We're going to start today from Zayin Amud Bet. It's about three quarters of the way down the page. You know which page it is because it's not highlighted from the top, only from the bottom. Then we're going to discard nicely that page, and we're going to turn to today's daf, which is Daf Chet, and we'll work our way through. In terms of setting the context, as I've now said ad nauseum for the last three daf, our basic question is, when do we stop saying V'tein Tal Umatar? The Mishnah had two views, either after Pesach or after Nisan. We've not even scratched the surface of that question yet, which we could resolve instantaneously by picking one of the options or disagreeing with both, which eventually we'll do. But so far, we haven't addressed that question. We've just asked, when do we stop saying V'tein Tal Umatar? And then the Gemara launched into this discussion of, well, hold on a minute. If you're talking about stopping saying a particular prayer, what is the implication of that? What does prayer mean? How does providence work? Do we need rain? Is rain good? Is rain bad? Is this a factor in our lives really? Or is this just a ritual performance? And we've spent three daf. The first daf after that Mishnah was nine conversations between Menachem and Rav Yitzchak. We then had a daf that dealt with etymology. What does Yora mean, which is early rain? What does Malkush mean, which is late rain? What does Revi'ah mean, which means the rainfall? Why do we use these terminologies? And there were some reflections on providential precision along the way. Does God really, if it stops raining on a particular day, should I really read that as displeasure on the part of God? Or can I just say, that's meteorology, that's nature. Rain comes, rain doesn't come. And the Gemara leaned towards suggesting that we should see providence in everything. Does that mean we can ascribe providence to everything? Does that mean if something happens to someone, we can blame them for it? Chazal don't go in that direction, though they do know, as we came to the last daf, that they're quite happy to say, if it doesn't rain, it's because of X, Y, or Z, or even Z. Which is, if it doesn't rain, we had seven possible suggestions. Either because Lashon Hara, or because people are doing Truma Masa, or because people are Azei Panim, people are brazen. And we said that even though there are particular sages who take this route and ascribe providential displeasure to particular sins, the overall impression the Gemara gives is, it's impossible to pinpoint this, which is why we've given you an array of options, to say that no one really knows. There is a debate among the sages about what this is. It doesn't say so no one should say this, but it does imply that these are not hard and fast claims that really we should pin on people. But to really be reflected, if something happens, we ought to ascribe divine motive to it and be introspective and see maybe what we can do for ourselves, which is where the Gemara is going to head on Zayin Amud Bet, what we'll get to. That's where we're up to since that Mishnah. And today, on the surface level, there are two major themes that we're still going through, which is how great is rain? And if it doesn't rain, why hasn't it rained? So far, we've said rain is as great as four things. And remember what some of the four things as great rain is? It's as great as creation. It's as great as reviving the dead. It's as great as revelation, Matan Torah. And it's as great as the future redemption. So those are pretty big moments in Jewish history and human history. The creation of the cosmos, the revival of the dead, the messianic age, and the giving of the Torah. Those are all unique moments. And Michael pointed out to me afterwards last time that maybe the suggestion is, you know, every time it rains, we think, oh, it's raining. All right. But we should actually think, this is as great as Matan Torah. We shouldn't just punctuate history with kind of the great moments, but think about every moment as potentially great. You know, take a bite out of the bagel and think, oh, this is such a great bagel. Thank you, Hashem, for all this beauty in this world. This is as great in Matan Torah. And don't think that that's sacrilegious to compare it, but to find beauty in every moment. So that's one side of the coin. How great is rain? And the other side is, the Gemara suggests, if it hasn't rained, we shouldn't just think, oh, it hasn't rained today, but we should be sensitive to invisible providence. If it hasn't rained, what does that say? If the bagels wouldn't have been available this morning because the bakery couldn't open or something had happened, we'd just say, all right, no bagels this week. We'd say, oh, no bagel this morning. Maybe there's something going on upstairs. And then, you know, to start figuring out, being introspective, that's what the Gemara tries to push, to pay attention to invisible providence. And we had, as we said, like seven suggestions what that might mean. Today we're going to continue along those two themes back and forth. How great is rain? How problematic is it if it doesn't rain? But largely speaking, we still have an evolution of themes. So we began with the power of words. If we're saying v'tein tal u'matar, we recognize that saying v'tein tal u'matar, three words, can unleash the beauty we've just described. So words are powerful. And we had some conversations, one of which I imagine, stuck in my head because it seemed so alarming or odd, but may have stuck in your head too, is when Rav Nachman Yitzchak said, you say rachav, rachav, you can have sorts of physiological reaction, which again just gives voice to the power of words. We then have the precision of providence. I can unleash providence with words, and providence comes to me uniquely and to you uniquely because of that. And today, the theme that will kind of emerge through all the discussions is the importance of sincerity, because there's a balance here. If we say words are super important, so I just say v'tein tal u'matar, it should rain. And if it doesn't, you know, I'm going to knock, I'll turn the power on and off. Why isn't it working? And the suggestion today is going to be that it's not just about words. It's also about how you feel when you say those words, what you think. Are you sincere? And kind of counterbalancing that. And then the pendulum will swing that way. So, well, if it's all about how I feel, what do I need prayer for? How about I just sincerely want it to rain? God needs me to speak and, you know, spit it out, you know, just know what I feel. So there's this back and forth in the Daf about being sincere, but the need to enunciate as well, which is important in the context of prayer, but also important in the context of all relationships, that it is important that, you know, if we have someone important in our lives, that we enunciate how we feel. And it's also important that we actually feel it. But it's not enough just to have one or the other. So that is the overall thematic structure of today. And the dedication this morning, I don't have the name. Again? Masha bat Harav Aaron Shlomo. Avram Shlomo. Masha bat Avram Shlomo. Today's learning is sponsored, and breakfast is sponsored by Jerry Chani Zatz in memory of Jerry's mother for the occasion of the first Yortzeit. Sham should have an aliyah. Thank you. And thank you for finding the anonymous sponsor each week as well, which we will treat as anonymous. So thank you. So in Dav Zayin Amud in the middle, we're going to power through, although we may have now used up all our time. So it's Rav Chatanya ben Akasha. Let's begin. Amar Rav Katina. I hope the vowels are helpful for you. They're certainly helpful for me. Zayin Amud Bet in the middle. We're in the middle of describing lack of rain may indicate what? Amar Rav Katina. Rav Katina says, Eng shamin ha'atzrin ala bishul bittul Torah. If there's no rain, it's because people haven't been learning Torah. Shnei Amar, as it says, but saltayim yimach hamakare, which means out of slothfulness, the roof will sink in. So if you've ever had to replace a roof, Harvey, it wasn't your fault. The tree fell. That was not you. But in theory, if roofs become dilapidated, if roofs fall in over time, the Pasuk is suggesting that it's out of apathy on the part of the homeowner. So here the Chazal translate this, Bishvil atzlut, out of apathy, meaning Shahaya bi Yisrael shlo asku b'Torah, that the Jews haven't studied Torah, na'aseh sono shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu mach, the enemy of God, which is a euphemism for God. We don't want to describe God as sunken, but we say God will become sunken, meaning if we don't put in our effort to study God's will, God becomes sunken, which could be read as kind of a personality. God becomes depressed. It could mean that his impression on us recedes, but he's less involved in our lives, which means that the rain isn't going to fall. Ve'in machela ani, and what does sunken mean in this context? It means impoverished. Shnei mave imachu me'arkecha. This is the pasuk in Vayikra that says if their value is too low for you, or impoverished or poor for you. Ve'in mekarel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the rafters, meaning the roof, means God. How do I know that the roof means God? Shnei mave, there's a verse that says in mekarel b'mayim al yotav, which we may be familiar with from various haftorahs and elsewhere, that God lays a lattice or rafters in the heavens. So if we don't learn Torah because of a lack of commitment, the roof of our cosmos, God will sink away. We won't have rain. Rav Yosef Amar Mahacha. Rav Yosef said, I agree with you, but I've got a different proof text. Va'ata lo ra'u or, now that you do not see light. Now, what is light a metaphor for often?
Torah.
Yeah, Torah says it's going to work like that here again. Bahiru bashchakim, it is clear in the skies. Now, I know many of us wake up every day and think, oh, what a beautiful clear sky. But for many times and places in history, a clear sky was an empty threat. In the sense that there was no rain coming and it was a threat, not beautiful. Veruach avravata harem, the verse continues, now that you don't see light, the skies are clear and the wind wipes it all away. Vein or elatora, what does it mean to say if you don't see light? It means if you're not living an enlightened life, you're not engaging in God's will in the Torah. How do we know Torah means light? Shneimar ki nemetz v'Torah or, there's an association in that verse. Baru b'shachakim, it will be clear in the heavens. If you don't see light, the skies will be clear. There was a phrase growing up in England, I don't know if there's a phrase here, about the color of the sky, whether it's going to rain tomorrow, red sky at night, shepherd's delight. Anybody, is that a phrase here too?
Sailors, fishermen.
Oh, a whole bunch of happy people. Sailors, fishermen, shepherds. But there's another half to that verse, but I don't remember what it is. That verse, that saying. But this is a saying, if you don't gain in Torah, there will be clear skies tomorrow. Tana Be'er Yishmon, Be'er Yishmon goes even further. Afilu b'shar shurakin asim b'horim b'horim lo'rin mata mata. Even if the sky has these kind of light clouds that look like maybe they'll rain, ruach avrata harem, the wind will wipe it away. So if you don't learn Torah, you'll have clear sky. And even if they look like wispy clouds are building, the wind's going to wipe it away. So there is an engagement there that if we're not learning Torah, we can ascribe that apathy to our circumstances. Rabami says, and I didn't even have to bold this. They have the bold here for the names as well. Rabami, sorry for the cheating job. You want to know why it hasn't rained? Because people are stealing from each other. Shneemar, as it says, al kapaim kisaor, which means on the palms the light is covered. Ba'avon kapaim, it means because of the sin that one commits with their hands, kisaor, the light is concealed. Now, what does light mean in this context? It's not going to mean Torah. Ve'en kapayim el hamas. What does the sin of the hands mean? It means hamas, which means theft. Shneema min hamas eshebe kapayim ve'en orim. What does light mean? El amatar, it means rain. Shneema yafitz anan aro, that God scatters the clouds of his light. Now we've got a very interesting remark. The Gemara is going to say, okay, if it doesn't rain, it's because people have been stealing. So if I were to say to you, okay, well, people have been stealing, we need it to rain, how do we resolve this issue? How are we going to get things back to normal? What would you suggest?
Stop stealing.
Yeah, stop stealing might be good, and not only stop stealing, maybe give the stuff back. So the Gemara says, Maita Kante, how do we resolve this issue, and what's the answer? Yarbe bitfila, pray more. So you can keep the stuff. Just pray more. As it says in the verse, and I commanded you, in your imploring, vein pigya le tfila, and imploring means prayer, shneimava, tal, titpalel, badha, amazev, al tifgabi, as the verse suggests, it connects prayer and imploring. And there are various readings as to why it doesn't say give the stuff back. There are two readings, in fact. One is that it's not enough to give the stuff back. Of course, you've got to stop stealing and return the stolen items, but you need to pray too. It's not a matter of just resolving the civil problem. If you've stolen, returning it isn't enough. It leaves a stain, a taint on your character that you need to address with God. Alternatively, that prayer is so great that even if you can't sort out society, meaning we are never, ever going to rid society of theft. People are going to steal. That's just the reality. We're going to have full jail cells. That's just the way it's going to work. But we ought to pray anyway, and prayer is so potent that even in a world of imperfection, we can impact providence. That's the other reading, and take your pick or your preference. Okay, Rabami gives another reason for maybe, and this is the final reason we have on this daf, which is probably a signal from the Gemara at the very least, that this is the most broad idea and probably the most compelling notion as to what we can ascribe to lack of rain. What does it mean in the verse when it says im kahaha barzel, if the iron is blunt, vahulo panim kilkal, and its face hasn't been wetted? Anyone know what it means to wet metal? W-H-E-T? Wet? Yeah, to like sharpen. Does it involve water? I think you put water on it and then you use a stone. But it's just coincidental that it means wet like that. So that's a verse in Proverbs. If the iron isn't sharp, if it's blunt and you haven't wetted its face, what does that mean? Obviously what that means is if you haven't sharpened the tool, it's not going to work. But what does it mean in larger terms? Imra ita rakia shikia ka barzel. If you see that the sky is kiha, is blunted like iron, milahuri talamata, meaning it is like nothing is happening. The sky is just empty. There is nothing coming. Why? Bishvil Maaseh HaDorah, it is because of Hapanim, the face of the generation, Mukul Kalin, hasn't been wetted, meaning Mukul Kal. What does Mukul Kal mean? It means like degenerate. Things have become corrupted. If you want to know why it's not raining, it's not because of theft, it's not because of Truma Maaseh, it's not because of Bittul Torah, it's because there's just corruption. It means there's something wrong. So at the very least, Rabbi Ami says, if you don't feel comfortable ascribing a particular sin or a particular blame, you should still be reflective and think, it is a response to our condition, that things are not going well. Shne'emar, as it says, Rupanim Kalkav. Matakanatan, what is the resolution here? Yitgabaru Barachamim. And this again suggests, if you want to resolve corruption, of course, you should put in regulations and ways to address corruption, but never aspire to rid the world of corruption. It's impossible. What you need to do is implore God for mercy. Shne'emar, as the verse continues, V'chayalim yigaber, you should increase your energies or efforts. And the verse continues there, V'yitron hachsher chachma, and it's actually more effective to be wise. Meaning, kol shekeinim hukshu ma'aseh miyikara, of course God's going to respond well. You don't have to go down the road of sin and corruption and then pray for mercy and then God reacts. If you're good, God will treat you well, even if you don't have this eureka moment. Okay, we're now nearly on to our daf. Rish Lakish Amar, Rish Lakish said, and we're now, it's in yellow because this is kind of an excursus or a peripheral thought. Im ra'ita talmid chacham. And this, in theory, is just another reflection on that same verse. So some people say, oh, well, this thought is thrown in here because it connects peripherally to the verse. But of course, we've had a number of peripheral thoughts on what it means to have an education, how pedagogy interacts with rain. And actually, I took the chance in my ample moments this week to look into gardening metaphors in education, which are almost as old as human records are, going back to Sophocles and the Greeks, Plato, that it's about cultivating the next age. A lot of research today about how we should shift that, because actually the metaphors of cultivation and education make students seem very passive, that teachers are kind of tending to them, and students just sit there and are kind of tended to. We need to change it. Anyone know what the symbol of the Department of Education is? Anyone know what the symbol of the Department of Defense is? Big gun? No, not really. It's an eagle with two things in its hands. The Department of Education. Say again?
Book.
You would imagine, right. Actually, the Department of Education, it's a big oak tree with an oak in the middle. Again, and that was only actually accredited as a symbol in 1985. I guess they didn't know how to symbolize it for many years, but that was chosen, again, because of the metaphor of cultivation. So it connects to the whole issue of rain and providence and tending to the world and education. It's not just a matter of imparting information, but it takes character, it takes time, it takes patience, and we're going to have a couple of thoughts along that. If you see somebody whose learning is kasha lafka barzel, they're not learning well, their material isn't there. And as somebody who's now got 90 papers to grade by Monday, if you see someone who's struggling with their learning, what should you ascribe it to? One option as the teacher is to say, maybe I'm not as clear as I need to be, but what can you ascribe it to? Bishvil mishnato she'ina sidura alav. It's because their learning is disorganized. You want to know why someone can't repeat information? It's because it's a mess in their head. They haven't sat down and dealt with it. Because it says, if you want to know why things are blunt like iron, it's because if things haven't been wetted, they are makalkal. Maitakante, so how do you resolve this? One option, I had a number of emails this week, is say, please can I have an extension and have 2 weeks longer to do the midterm than the 1 hour that you've given me? That's one option to resolve it. Another way is Yarba Bishiva. A person should not go to yeshiva. A person should sit down, spend time. There are a number of readings in the commentaries to what this means. I think the plain reading is, it takes time to learn. One can't imagine, again, that you can just download information and expect it to be there. It takes a huge amount of patience and time for information to be organized in the mind. As it said, v'chayalim yigaber, you have to exert effort. And I always struggled with this as a student. I hated spending time on study. Sometimes that was a big problem. Yavre b'shiva, that's what you should have. Yitron echsha chochma, but of course the verse continues, if you had wisdom at the start, it would be better. It would obviously be better if it was organized in the first place. Take notes, make charts, organize. And I've tried to imbue this in my teaching. At YU, I make a huge amount of slides. It takes a huge amount of effort, but I try to organize it so that it's clear. And I'll see when I grade the papers if that was worthwhile. I enjoyed it anyway. Ki hadre shlakish av masada. Yes. Ki hadre shlakish, as we know about Reish Lakish, first word on the line is Duresh, have a masada manit in Arba Zimnin. He would study a Mishnah 40 times. before he would go to class, Keneged Mem Yom Shenitna Torah. And he says, why do I do it 40 times? It took 40 days to Moshe get the Torah. What's his implication here? Yeah, the Moshe got the Torah in one day. But he said, go over it again, go over it again. It didn't take 40 days for him to accrue the information. It took him 40 days to imbue the information that he got in one day. And then he went to Rabbi Yochanan. So you really have to go over this material a huge amount of time. If Adar Arva said, Masada Manitin Estrin V'Arbin Zim, you only have to do it 24 times, don't worry about it. Why? Keneged Torah Nevim K'tuvim, corresponding to the 24 books of Tanakh. These are obviously two very different metaphors for what it means to solidify information. One is about time, and the other is about range and context. We don't have a huge amount of time to go into that. V'ayla Kameh D'Rava, and then he go to Rava. Talking about Rava, Rava said, Imreita Tamu Shlomo Kasher Lav Kabaz, and if you want to know why someone's study is hard, we've done a lot of student blaming here. Why is information not penetrating their mind? Because it's not organized, they haven't spent time, they need to do this. So Rava says, you want to know really why? Bishvil Rabo She'enu Mas Bilo Panim, because the teacher hasn't been generous of spirit. The teacher hasn't created a nice atmosphere and ambience. It's been very stern and severe. Shneemar, as it says, V'hulu Panim Kilkal, because it says you haven't wetted your face, meaning you're standing there blunt-faced as a teacher, kind of drilling into the students, learn, learn, learn. Why isn't it clear? Because you haven't spent enough time and you haven't let it get into your thick head. And Rava says, actually, you want to know why? Teachers need to also represent a kindness in their teaching. Maita Kante, and you say, so what's the solution? You might think the solution is stop being so severe as a teacher. Fire the teacher. Yeah, rabbis aren't in the spirit of saying that kind of thing very much. Yarba alav re'im, increase friends for him. Increase friends for who? Right, I think I've kind of depicted it to lead you to that point. That's not what Rashi or anybody else says. They all say, oh, the student should have more friends to advocate for the teacher to be nicer. Meaning, but you could read this in any number of ways. Meaning maybe the student, you're never going to change the teacher. As Larry says, there's only one solution, which is if somebody's been teaching for 60 years and that's how they teach, you're not going to get them to change their way. But they don't say fire the teacher. They say, so the student should have more friends, meaning something to lift their spirits, or you should have more friends to advocate to the teacher to change them. Or maybe one reading that I've not seen, but I think is an interesting option, is that maybe the teacher should have more friends and they would get a little less severe in how they treat the young. Maita Kante, we said, have more friends. As it is, Chayalim, you got bear. You should increase your energies. And Chayalim is read there in some ways as like an army. Your advocates should be strengthened. V'itronech shachachma, koshken mehushuma asap, b'fnei rabo meikaren. It'd be even better if everybody was just appropriate before their teachers at the start, and the teacher wouldn't have to get angry, and it would just be, everything would be great. Okay, so that's our reflection on education for today. Amrab Ami, we're now going to figure out, are there any more possible reasons why maybe it didn't rain? And this is where we lean into prayer and sincerity when it comes to prayer, not just words. Rami says, my dichtiv, what does it mean when it says, im yishochan achash belo lachash, if the snake bites without a charmer, meaning if a snake's coming along and it's got a charmer with it, and I don't know if you've ever seen a snake charmer.
Yes.
And if, say again?
In Morocco.
Yeah. Right, so they charm it, and imagine, they say, look, I'm going to play the flute, and it's going to do something. So imagine if, as they're preparing, the snake starts doing it, and he says, wait, I haven't started yet. It kind of makes a mess of them. So, if the snake bites before the charmer tells it to, the charmer is out of business. It's not good for the charmer for the snake to do its own thing. But again, this seems like a very odd thing for King Solomon to be sharing with us. Yes, that's good advice for a charmer. What does this mean for us? It means, Imra'ita darsha shamay mishtachin k'nechoshet. If you see an age in which the heavens are like nechoshet, hanachash, they are coppered, meaning there is no rain coming. We've got metal metaphors for the sky. Barzel, copper, meaning nothing's coming. Bishvil lochashe lechishot she'im b'dor. Why is it? Because below lachash, there's nobody who knows how to whisper. What does it mean to whisper? Yeah, it means if there's no rain, it's because no one really knows how to pray in that age. So now it's not falling on a particular sin. It's saying no one knows how to remedy this sin. Nobody knows how to pray if there's no rain. Maita kanatan, and what is the resolution to this? Yelchu etzel misho de lochosh. You should find somebody who knows how to pray and ask them for help. Dichtiv yagid elav rei, as it says, you should talk to your friend about it. Einit shol aval lashon. And what does it mean that there's no benefit for the charmer? It means misha efsha lo lilchosh, if somebody has the capacity to pray and doesn't, ma na yeshlo, what's the point? And this is where it says you need to pray, You need the words to come out, and you need to know how to do it. Prayer is an acquired skill. But knowing how to pray isn't enough. You can't say, I'm a lochesh, I know how to do it. But if you're not doing it, it doesn't help. You need to know how to pray. You need to actually pray. You need to feel it. Vim lachash v'lo na'aneh, maitakante. What happens if you do pray and there's no answer? I've been praying for years. I've been praying for days. I've been praying for hours and nothing's happening. Maitakante, what can I do? Yelech eitzel chasid shabadov yabalav bitfilah. You should go to a righteous person of the age and ask them to increase their prayer. Shnei mavi etzavaleb mafkir, as it says in the verse, I've commanded you to implore me, v'in pigayel etfilah, and this is something we did on the previous stuff, and we know that pigiya, imploring, means prayer. Shnei mavi etzavaleb mafkir, as it says in the verse, I've commanded you to implore me, v'in pigayel etfilah. Okay, so we need to go to somebody who's an expert in prayer. So it says, don't give up. If prayer isn't working, it's because you're not doing it right, essentially. And that means you've got to find, and so what do? You just say, oh, forget it. You say, no, you have to find somebody who knows how to pray. We're not given any more guidance than that, but other than to seek out assistance. V'im lachash va'alata biyado. And if you pray, and guess what? You're standing there and you say, please, please, please help me. And then suddenly $1 million falls out of the sky and lands in your hand. Pretty good. I'm pretty good at this. But you then become arrogant. You think, oh, my prayers really work. Come to me. I'll tell you, this is exactly what I did. I stood with my feet together. I had my thumb in this direction. I have my hand over this hand. I know how to pray. And it always works. If that happens, maybe af la'olam, you bring anger into the world. Shnei'ma mikne af avoleh. As it says, and this verse is actually talking about cows, mikne meaning cattle, but mikne af, you acquire anger, al-oleh, through arrogance. Rava Amar. Rav says, since we're talking about this and we're talking about education as well, I'll note, Shnei Tam Lechacham Shoshim Be'erachad, if you've got two scholars living in the same town, Ve'inochin Zelezeb Halacha, and they're not gentle with each other when it comes to public policy or halachic discussion, Miknainim Ba'af Malin Oto, they generate anger and raise it into the area, Shnei Amam Mikne Af Avotleh, as we've said, you acquire anger through arrogance. So we've said not only does arrogance in prayer lead to anger in the world, but arrogance in education leads to anger in the world. People ought to have a level of humility. Amr Ish Lakish, Lakish said, since we've been talking about this verse about snakes, my dichtiv imishoch anachsh b'lachash, what does it mean if the snake bites without a charmer? There's no benefit to the charmer. La'atid lavo, in the future, you want to know what happens at the end of days? This is one vision. All the animals in the world are going to come next to the snake and say, hey, snake. Look, I get it. The lion is pretty vicious. He rips things apart, but then he eats it. Ze'ev torech ve'ochel. Wolves can be pretty vicious. They rip things apart and then they eat it. Ata ma'na yeshach. You go around biting things all the time that you never eat. What are you doing that for? What benefit do you get out of that? Umlahem, and the snake replies, Einit Ralaval Lashon. Yeah, there's no benefit for those who do slander either, but they seem to enjoy it and get away with it. Meaning you say terrible things about people. What benefit do you get out of it? I know it makes you feel good, but you don't eat it. So it's the same as a snake. It makes me feel good. That's what I'm here for. And this is kind of a reflection on, this is why it's in blue. It's kind of the outstanding part of the daf that it's the hardest to connect to the flow. In some ways, it's a reflection on words that are not aligned with intent, where you just, words are immensely powerful, but it very much depends on what you want to do with them that is important. Rabami says, Ein tfilato shel adam nishmat elim kein meisim nasha b'chapo. Prayers are not heard. So we're now reflecting again on words being important, but intent being just as important. Prayers are not heard unless meisim nasha b'chapo, you put your hands in your palm, your soul in your palm. You have to put, as we say in English, you wear your emotions on your sleeve. If you want prayer, so we're now getting some cues. You have to go to an expert. Now we're getting some cues. You want to know how to pray. Have sincerity when you pray. Shnei Amaris, it says, Nasa levavenu al kapayim, we lift our hearts into our palms. Is that true that prayers are only heard if you pay attention? And this is a reflection of the Gemara says, I look around Minyan, I look around Shul a lot. I don't see a lot of people paying attention to when they're praying. Are you sure? And not only that, but Okim Shmuel Amora Alev Adrash. I heard Shmuel give the following interpretation. There is a series of verses that says the following. We have Tuba Fiyim V'Shonam Yichad V'Lo, that these people are appeasing God with their mouths, and they're lying with their tongues. Libam lo nachanamo, their hearts aren't sitting with them. Lo ne manvrito, they're untrustworthy. Meaning all these people are frauds, hypocrites, And God is reflecting on a generation of people who don't mean what they say. And what does it say in the very next verse, the verse we begin Marav with every night? He's merciful and he atones for all sin. So Shmuel says, what does that mean? That means even if you don't pay attention to what you're saying, God will answer your prayers. Lokasha, and this is where the Gemara says, yeah. They're both true. It is true that prayers are only heard if you mean them and you pay attention to what you're saying. And it's true that prayers are heard even when you don't mean them. But there's a big difference between the two scenarios. One is b'yachid, and one is b'tzibur. If you're by yourself, you need to mean what you say. If you're in a community, your intention has less import, which is an astonishing thing. But this is one of those sources people will turn to. When we had COVID and we couldn't daven in shul, and everyone said, what does this mean? It's a chiyuv kares if we don't daven in a minyan. Of course, it's not. There's no biblical mandate to daven in a minyan. There's possibly a rabbinic law to daven in a minyan, possibly not. But these are one of the sources where it says, look, the Gemara says you don't have to pay attention when you're in a minyan. And wouldn't we all love not to pay attention when we're davening, so we should be in a minyan? Or the point being, if we don't have to pay attention, it's a signal that it's more powerful. So maybe that's how we ought to spend our time gathering together the community. Rabbami gives us another reason why maybe it won't rain. You want to know why it's not raining? Well, the only way to make it rain is if there are Baalei Amana, if there are people of faith. Now, what does it mean to have people of faith? And this is a hard piece to decipher. Shneimar, as it says in the verse, Emet Meretz Titzmach, that truth grows from the ground, but Tzedek Mishamayim Nishkaf, and righteousness comes out from the heavens. So they're seen here as a dynamic. If we emerge, or if we emit truth, righteousness will rain down. So if we live lives of truth, it will lead to rain. What does it mean to live lives of truth? To be a Baalei Amana, to be a person of faith? Amrabami says, come and see how great it is to have people of faith. Minayan, how do we know? Mecholda Obar, from the story of the weasel and the pit. Anyone know the story of the weasel and the pit? Yeah, too bad, because he doesn't give it to us here. And if you believe in a weasel and a pit, all the more so if you believe in God, it's going to work. So Rashi does happen to give us the story, and it appears in Brachot and elsewhere. It's a somewhat long story where there's a young lady falls into a pit. She needs help getting out, and a man comes along and sees and says, oh, wow, I'm going to help you, and helps her out, and they fall in love in this romantic moment, and they say, we're going to marry each other someday. We're too young, we're too busy, but someday we'll marry each other. And she says, but there are no witnesses. And he says, well, the pit will be a witness. Oh, look, and there's a weasel running by. The weasel and the pit will be our witnesses. And this is a moment of deep romance where the world will testify to our love. Of course, moments of deep romance sometimes pass. You go on with your life. Years later, he marries somebody else and they have kids. And tragedy strikes and their two kids are killed in tragic accidents. How? Two kids die in tragic accidents. One falls in a pit and one gets bitten by a weasel. And then the man realizes, oh my gosh, I made this commitment in this flight of romance years ago, and I don't know what the story is with her, and I moved on in my life, and I need to heed my attention to the... I used the pit and the weasel, really, I said, these are my witnesses, and I meant it, and it came back to haunt me. And that's an example of Baalei Amana, people who give faith to objects into their lives. And it says, if giving that amount of faith into natural objects led to that sort of outcome, that it came back at them, imagine if you invest God in your life. If you say, God will be my witness, and you really mean it, I mean, that can come back to haunt you, but it can also come back to lift you. So that's the sort of Baalei Amana, is someone who attunes themselves to power all around them, and you tune yourself to the power of natural objects. Of course, if you tune yourself to the power of God, it will lead to goodness, and that's how you make it rain, and if you don't do that, it won't rain. That's the assumption there. Rabbi Yochanan said, whoever is scrupulous on themselves on earth, they are scrupulous upon them in heaven. And this is a strange moment where it says, if you are exacting on your own behavior, God doesn't say, oh, they're exacting, I'll let them off. It says, oh, you want to be exacting, I'll be exacting too. We should both be attuned to how you conduct your life. It says, if we live with integrity on earth, righteousness or justice will come down from heaven. Says, I got the same thing with a different verse, that your anger is aligned with those who fear you. A strange moment says, if you fear God, sometimes God will say, oh, we're in this in a sincere relationship. You're not looking for an easy pass. I mean, I'll put it this way. Part of the emails I got this week are from students who want an easy time. my inclination, I'm a bit of a pushover generally, and my inclination is I don't want to fight with a student. What am I getting out of this? They're not going to actually have a better life if I insist they do it in this way. And I'd be a little more flexible if a student comes and says, oh, one student said, I woke up, I was ill this morning, can I please take it later today? I was like, fine. But if somebody, and when I'm grading the paper, I'll probably be a little more flexible. If someone has been really paid attention in class and they've gone through their notes and they're thorough and they answer a question and they do it fully and they, like, I can see they've missed a major point, I'm more likely to say, oh, I'm going to take a half a point off here so we can talk about it, which isn't particularly fair. But that tends to be how we operate. You're taking this seriously, I'm going to take you seriously. And that means I'm going to be more exacting. The assumption here is God is going to react the same way. If we take ourselves seriously, God will say, oh, you're in this, you're really playing this seriously. I'm going to involve myself with your life. And that means sometimes you'll get suffering. That means sometimes I will dock a point. But at least you'll feel the sense of I'm in a relationship here, as opposed to he's just letting me go. And then it continues, I get it from Rish Lakish, I'm a I get it from here. Pagata, Eda Sasvers, it's Segbioche, Yizkarucha, Hena Tachavas, Venechataba, Hem, Olavina Rasheah, a verse that talks about if you're righteous and God reacts to you with anger on occasion. Abishu ben Levi, Shuben Levi says, Kolos Samech, Yisun, Shabana Love, if anybody is joyful with the suffering they get, maybe Yeshua lo olam, they bring salvation to the world. Incredibly odd moment where it says, if you're suffering and you're happy, you bring salvation to the world. What on earth does that mean? Again, we could spend, in fact, we did a three-part series about this in Elul, but at least at some surface level, it's suggesting if a person, not despite suffering, feels joy, but says, I feel a sense of joy in my suffering because at least God is in my life. I feel like God is reacting to me. Even if it's painful, it brings salvation into the world. That's the assumption. So again, why is this here? If it doesn't rain, we can pass it off as, all right, there's no rain today. But if it doesn't rain and we say, no, I'm taking this seriously, if it's not raining, it's because if something is wrong that needs to be addressed, even though it's painful because there's no rain today, and I'm seeing that as providence, I feel a sense of attention, that God is reacting to me. I'm empowered to engage with God, and God is talking to me. And there's a sense of sameach, simcha, not happiness in pleasure terms, but happiness in the sense of I'm engaged in a relationship. Amr Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish says, my dichtiv, we're now going to be able to blast through 15 lines pretty quickly. Reish Lakish says, talking now, we're in the green, because we're talking about how great rain is now. We've had salvation, we've had creation, revival of the dead, giving of the Torah. We're now going to have a comparison to childbirth. Why does it say, Vatzaret HaShamayim, that the heavens will be stopped up? Because when the heavens aren't giving rain, it's compared to a woman who's in the pangs of childbirth but isn't giving birth. Never having been in that circumstance myself, but having been, I wouldn't really say on the receiving end, but in the room twice when someone is giving birth, it's not a pleasant experience if you want to give birth and the baby's not coming. Sometimes this can be days. People are, you know, desperate for the baby to come. It's not happening. Why? I don't know what to do to make this happen. And the rain is being compared to that, which is, as Michael suggested, a prism. Not just, we're going to see a lot of verbal connections here between how rain is described metaphorically and birth is, but when we're waiting for rain, we should see it as occasion which is fraught with risk and danger, fraught with possibilities. I mean, is having a child, let's put it this way, is having a child a good thing? Yeah, it's a good thing. Does it always lead to happiness in life? Yeah, no. I'm not asking you to talk about personal experience, but I'm saying generally in life. And I'm sure there are times in all of our lives where it's frustrating. And there are moments where we think, oh, you know, if I didn't have kids, my life would have been radically different. But of course, overwhelmingly, we all have different experiences. But there are certainly cases we can think about. Anyone seen the movie 12 Angry Men?
Oh, yes.
There's the undercurrent, at least of one of the main actors, is he's hugely frustrated with his child, and of course he breaks down in love with his child at the end, but he's kind of angry about all the youth and all the young people. But having kids, it's a huge can of worms. It's a wonderful thing full of all sorts of danger. And with rain, we're now being suggested it's as great as having kids, but that doesn't mean it's always easy. And we're now going to pivot into a moment where the Gemara starts describing rain as difficult. I mean, and this is how we tend to experience it now. When it rains, it's like, oh, my shoes are going to get muddy. I'm going to slip. I need to watch out when I'm driving more. I'm more concerned about somebody, a family member who's driving on the road, whatever it is. That's where we're going to start pivoting. But we're starting along the route that it talks about childbirth in the same way that it talks about rain. And this is what in the name of Baal Kapara. It says withholding with rain, and it says withholding with a woman in childbirth. How do we know it says it with a woman? This is in Bereshit, in the context when Sarah is taken by Avimelech. It says in response to her being taken, all the women of the kingdom wouldn't have children. It says Atzor. It says that with rain as well. It says the word later with women, and it says later with rain. We know it says v'teled ben or v'teled bat. It always talks about giving birth in those terms for women. And it uses the same term with rain. It says that the rain will generate in the same sense. It talks about the same kind of remembrances with birth. It says God remembered Sarah. It says the same term when it comes to rain. So there is a verbal bridge being made again and again and again when it comes to childbirth and rain, which is a pregnant metaphor, literally and metaphorically. Thank you. My peleg elokim alamayim. What does it mean that the vaults of God are full of water? And this actually speaks to an ancient cosmology. In the ancient world, before we understood the meteorology of how rain works, they did understand that rain evaporates and that it comes down. But there was an ancient cosmological idea that rain was not just stored in clouds, but rain was stored in these kind of storehouses above the firmament, which would then come into the clouds and then come down. Whether this was a metaphor at this point or whether this was actually how they thought rain worked is an open question. But this is, what does it mean that God's vaults were full of water? Tana, it was taught last green bit. Kamin kuba yesh barakia, there is like this box in the skies, shimimena gushamim yotzeim, where the rain comes out of. Let's blast through another few verses, another few lines. Amr Shmuel ben Achmani, we're now going to have this yellow reflection, not on how great rain is, but on how different circumstances unfold when it comes to prayer, how we should address issues. Does providence pick out in particular ways, or is rain just rain? Amr Shmuel ben Achmani. Shmuel ben Achmani says, "Ma'idichtivim leshevet im la'arusim lechesim isienu." What does it mean when God talks about im leshevet? What does shevet mean? Shevet usually means tribe, but it can also mean a staff or a stick or a cane, which is used for, or at least was one day, good in the old days. What did they use it for? Discipline. There you go. And those were the days. In the shevet, in the arse, in the chesed, in the anyway, if it's like a cane, if it's like the land, if it's for kindness, you'll find it. What does this mean, Rav Nachmani says? Rishbo ben Nachmani. In the shevet, if it is as a cane, baharim gvar, God will make it rain in the hills and the mountains. Meaning we can't say, oh look, it's raining over there in the distance, God's happy with us. Meaning if it's not raining where you need it to rain, it's almost God teasing us. Don't think, oh, providence isn't really working. God kind of fell asleep with his elbow on the button and it kind of started raining in the wrong place, but he likes us. If it's raining in the hills and mountains, not on our fields, God is saying, I've got the goods and you don't get it. You're not having them. And maybe you're so distracted from me, I'm not going to withhold it because you're just going to think it's not raining. I'm going to rain in the wrong place to wake you up. That's what the shevet means. I mean, and this is chastising. So again, this is inviting us to see in the world the hand of God. If it's raining in the wrong place, we should think, oh, there's a reason that's happening. It's meant to chastise us. Imlech said, or maybe it'll be, if God wants to be kind, what will he do? Yam tzieu la'aretz so besadu v'chamim, it will rain in the land, meaning in the fields and the vineyards. Im leshevet li lanot, if it is to tease us, it will be on the trees, meaning trees can survive without rain in the same way. Im la'aretz so, and if it's in the land, lezra'im, it will be in for the seeds. Im lechesed yam tzieu baretz chin umaret, and if it's for kindness, it will be even into our cisterns to give us drinking water in all sorts of places. We still depend very much on what are the reservoirs for drinking water. New York in particular has got a whole system set up in the mountains that we all depend on all the time, which in theory would be at risk if we had serious rain problems. So we'll finish with this bit. Rabbi Shmuel ben Achmani says, "Hava kafna umutna." There was a time when there was a kafna, a famine, umutna, and a plague. I don't know if how many of you remember when COVID began. There seemed to be one after the other, a series of crazy crises that everybody was... I mean, COVID was bad enough, And then I don't know if you remember the murder hornets. And remember that there was a week when they were talking about these murder hornets. We're like, what? Could it, what, aliens next week? What's happening? Can we just have one crisis at a time? And he says, so there was a famine and there was a plague. Amre hechinavim. They said, what should we do? Nivai rachmei atar telo avdus. Says, we can't ask God to help us on both. Why? I'll have to come to that. But there is an assumption now in the sages that you can't pray for two crises at the same time. So what we should do, we should pray to get rid of the plague and we'll just cope with the famine. Meaning, what is the priority here? The priority is we need to be alive. Food is nice, but if we're not alive, we can't have food. So we should pray for the plague to disappear and then we'll just cope with the famine and we'll get rid of that when we can. One step at a time. Amlu b'shmor Nachmani. Shmor Nachmani said, I've got a better idea. N'bai rachmei akafna, pray for the famine to disappear. Because if you pray for the famine to disappear, God is not going to say, let's get rid of the famine so they can all eat, and then everybody dies from a plague. Why would he do that? Dehi avrachmana suvna, when God gives satiation or nutrition, l'chayahu deyav, he's going to give it for people who are going to live. Dechtiv, how do I know? Potech et yadecha, open up your hand, God, umaspi l'chol chay ratzon, and give the needs of the living. So there's a debate here. Again, if we had a huge amount of time, we could kind of plumb the depths of this debate about whether one engages prayer strategically and says, I'm going to pray for the thing that will trigger God to do both things that I need, or whether we respect the integrity of only asking for one thing. And why would I only ask for one thing at a time? I should note, by the way, in conflict resolution and relationship management, they often suggest this as well. If you're in a dispute with somebody and you're going to have a conversation about it, it's much better to start the conversation with one concrete thing than coming and just say, look, this isn't working, you're terrible, our relationship's a mess, I can't deal with this, you've got this and this and this and this. You say, look, there's one thing. You know, every time we come to the same office in the same morning, there's one thing you do that really I find very difficult. Is it possible to address that? And one thing at a time is a good way to manage a relationship. In theory, maybe that's a suggestion. And Rosh Hashanah Nachmani says, God can cope with more than one thing at a time. You just have to focus your attention. But either way, I said we weren't going to talk about it, so we're not going to talk about it. And now it asks the important question. First one on the line is Chai Uminalan de la Matslina Natarte. How do you know you can't pray for two things? So it doesn't go into the psychology of conflict resolution, but it does quote a verse. Dichtiv, as it says, Fanatsuma Vanavakshum Elakenu Alzot. It says, we fasted and we prayed for God Alzot on this. What does it imply that says we prayed for this? It implies that we prayed for one single thing, even though presumably there's more. Otherwise, we would just say we prayed to God. Michlad de ikai achriti implies there were other things, but they only prayed for him. Bamrava amrei mishmeid rabchani mahacha. In the West, in Israel, they would say from Rimchagai, rather, they got it from this verse. V'rachmin lembibai min kadam ala dishma al raza dana. We implored God for mercy, requiring help al raza dana on this crisis, which Rashi adds very helpfully. Midaniel, that this is from the book of Daniel, which is why it's in Aramaic, even though it's a verse. Michlad de Ichachriti implies there's another one. Now let's finish this. Yellow B'mir Rebzera, God's Rebzera, Rebzera said there was a time when a decree was passed, not by God, but by the authorities over us. Ugazo de la Metav Batanit, and they say, Jews, you're not allowed to fast. It's a strange thing to insist Jews aren't allowed to do. You're not allowed to fast. Because we don't want you ascribing providence to your behavior. It's almost like they're trying to attack the theology of the Jews, saying, you're not allowed to pray. I mean, this is in place, in at least one place in the world, where Jews are not allowed to pray. Where are Jews not allowed to pray by law? Har Habayit. It's a very strange moment. So you're saying our prayer is effective? You're saying our prayer is... What are you assuming by saying we're not allowed to pray there? So there's a similar theological assault here, where the authority said, you're not allowed to fast. What difference is it to you if I fast? I don't want you to feel confident that your prayers work. I want to get you in the heart. Amlu Rabzera. Rabzera says, so what should we do? Nikable alevan, let us accept a fast upon ourselves. V'lechi batal agzeri leitafei, and then when we're allowed to fast, we'll fast. And people are going to turn around and say, well, what use is that? They say, oh, I promise you, God, I'm going to fast. God doesn't care. You have to actually fast. So this, again, touches on the issue. Is it about sincerity of feeling or is it about ritual behavior? And this is the perfect kind of conflict in reality where I can feel a certain way and I can't express, is that still effective? And he says, yes.
Amrele, they said, Emanelacha, how do you know this? Amalu, and he says, Shechtiv, it says, Vayoma Elai El Tira Daniel, and it said to me, don't fear Daniel, Ki Min Ayom Arishon, because from the very first day, Ashanatate Lebecha Lavin Latanot, that you committed your heart to understand and fast, if Nelokecha Nishma Dvarecha, I heard your call. So it is true that we need to pray, it is true we need to enunciate, it's true we need to behave aligned with our ritual lives, but sincerity is of key import as well. We're going to stop there. Next time we'll pick up from Rabbi Yitzchak, and we'll go ahead. I thank you for your patience, your time. Thank you for the sponsorship. Hashem should have an aliyah. Masha Bat Harav Aaron Abraham Shlomo. Thank you.